Welcome to the Well Woman Show, where we interview women executives, leaders, and entrepreneurs.
And you're listening to the Well Woman Show,
where motivated women achieve fulfillment and well-being.
You're listening to the Well Woman Show.
Well, I try to take time for myself by coming to things like Well Woman drinks.
To be accepting of myself no matter what, and to step away from judgment as much as possible.
You're listening to the Well Women Show.
You're going to be in for a good ride. I don't think I would have any advice per se because I don't regret anything. Everything I've ever done, I've learned from it one way or another, good or bad.
I think it comes down to being a little bit selfish for yourself, you know, put your own oxygen mask on first and then give what's left.
I'm a woman. I would prefer to tell my own story. My story, though it's very personal, is universal because everything that happens to me happens to just basically everybody, especially women.
You're listening to The Well Woman Show. And now your host, Giovanna Rossi.
Hello, hello. It's Giovanna Rossi here, and welcome to another episode of The Well Woman Show, where I interview women leaders, executives, and entrepreneurs about their lives and their road to becoming and being who they are today. I'm so happy you're here, so thanks for tuning in. Today's topic is rewiring your brain for greater achievement, and hopefully by the end of the show, you'll be inspired to begin a new daily routine to develop greater control over your brain processes and habits. My guest today is Joycelyn Campbell, founder of Farther to Go and Enneagram Personality Type Experts. Farther to Go is an educational program where participants learn how brains are wired, what our true goals and desires are, and how to use your intentions and habits to reach those goals. Today, I'm going to talk with Joycelyn about discovering and using the strengths of our personality types, how the unconscious brain can sabotage our best intentions, and how to overcome this, and how to break bad habits and replace them with new ones. And I'm excited because the free giveaway today is the Riso Hudson Enneagram Type Indicator, a personality typing worksheet. So listeners can download it at wellwomanlife.com/006show. I love the worksheet because it offers a quick introduction to Enneagrams and helps you get to know yourself and the way that you interact with the world better by discovering your type. But before we get started, I want to thank our sponsor today, Leafy Greens. They provide seasonal cleanses and nutrition consultations, and I love them. Leah is the owner, and she does a great 21-day cleanse that helped me focus more. It helped me reduce really bad neck pain I've had for years and also get rid of my allergies. Imagine that. So you can visit wellwomanlife.com/leafygreens to sign up for the cleanse and get a special 10% Well Woman discount. Now to my interview with Farther to Go founder Joycelyn Campbell. I am speaking with Joycelyn Campbell. Welcome to the program.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
Give me a short summary of who you are and what your commitment is to women's well-being.
Okay, who I am is, I'm going to talk about this in terms of the Enneagram because that's what we've been talking about. I'm a type 8 female, which is a person who tends to go after what she wants, to have a vision to do those kinds of things. And so I've also done a variety of things. I've been a substance abuse counselor. I've worked for a newspaper. I have been the firm administrator of an accounting firm. I've done graphic design. I've done writing. And now I have a business called Farther to Go, and that's about helping people learn how to use their brain instead of letting their brain use them.
And do you specifically work with women? Or like, how is that different?
That's a good question. So in the past, I've worked a lot with men, and right now most of my clients are women. So I do have some men who are interested in the classes and learning how to use their brain. This is good news. But primarily my clients are women.
And is that because you've targeted women, or is it because women are more interested in learning about their brain?
That's a good question. I think that women do seem to be more interested. I think it's not so much that they want to learn about their brain, but they want to learn how to make changes. And so my clients tend to be women in an age range from mid-40s to 70s, 80s, into early 90s. And they are at a point where they figure I've got X amount of time left and there are things that I want to do and I want to figure out how to do it instead of fumbling around.
Okay, so let's talk specifically for a minute about this brain work that you do. What is the general concept behind what you are teaching?
What this is based on is the neuroscience research of the past 20 or 30 years. And that has been revolutionary in terms of the way that we look at what's really driving us. So we used to think that we could actually access what's in the unconscious. So that's a part of the brain that basically keeps us alive, but it also determines what we pay attention to, what we think, feel, say, a lot of things that we think we're consciously choosing. So we used to think that we were making conscious choices about all of these behaviors, all of the things that we said and did. And that was very confusing because why am I choosing to do this in this moment when I know that's not the thing that I want to do? That's not the thing I intended to do. So this new...
Give me an example of a behavior that you're talking about.
Well, really simple stuff in terms of habits is I'm trying to eat, I or somebody is trying to eat healthier. So here's my plan. This is what I'm going to do. When I get home from work, I'm going to have this for dinner. And instead, I come home from work and I have the thing that I usually have for dinner, which is not what I intended to eat and it's not healthy. So what's going on there is that this part of the brain that runs us processes information at 11 million bits at a time, and the conscious brain processes 40 bits at a time. So the unconscious picks up cues and triggers in the environment, and it does what it's always done before. It doesn't do the new thing that you thought earlier this week you wanted it to do. It's just going, it's in a track, and it just keeps on going on that track. And when you try to do something different, it thinks that you're making a mistake. So you have, your conscious brain thinks, this is really it, this is what I want to do, this is healthy, I know why I want to do this, but the unconscious part of your brain is not interested. It's interested in maintaining the status quo and doing whatever it is that it's been doing. So your good thought, your higher aspirations, your goals are not of any interest at all to the part of the brain that runs you most of the time. And it's going to win almost every time.
And when did the unconscious part of the brain decide to do things that way?
Well, it doesn't really decide. So it uses associative thinking. So the conscious part of the brain is the logical, rational part of the brain. And the unconscious uses associative thinking. This looks like that. When we're in this situation, that's what happens next. So it makes a lot of predictions. It says, you're in the kitchen. It's this time of day. You're hungry. This is what you eat.
So it's based on previous experiences that can stem from probably childhood.
It can stem from all kinds of things, right? And childhood experiences, just patterns of behavior that we've gotten into for accidentally, for no good reason. The brain is programmed to create habits. It's an energy-saving device. And so it will turn things into habits whether we intend them to become habits or not. And so one of the things that I do in my classes is I educate people about how the habit loop works so that they can change the routine that's the part of that habit, or that they can create habits that they really want to have instead of the ones they just happen to end up with.
So, Joycelyn, we often focus on things that we need in our lives at the time. Was this something that you needed for yourself to figure this out?
Yes, absolutely. About 3.5 years ago, I was at a point where I felt like I just was not happy, satisfied, whatever you want to call it, with my life. And I had the thought, if this is the way it's going to be, I'm not interested. And so I decided that what the problem was for me was that I could look at periods of my life in the past that had been really deeply satisfying, where I felt like everything was chugging along. I was getting what I wanted, the people that I was involved with were getting what they wanted or needed from me, and everything was really good. But then the circumstances would change, and I would not have access to that anymore, and I didn't really even have a concept for looking for it. I didn't know what to look for to get back to having a satisfying life. So my goal was to figure out, well, what do those things have in common? That was how I approached it, so that I can say, okay, if I have these things in my life, then I'm going to be satisfied. However I'm getting them, because there were a variety of ways that I had gotten them in the past, and that was revolutionary to me to see. If I have these things, what I now call big picture wants, in my life, then I'm going to be satisfied. And there are multiple paths to all of these. So it's not about finding a purpose or a mission or any of those things. It's about there are a variety of things that I want in my life, and there are a variety of ways to get those things. And I can do it. I can do it.
How do people figure out their big picture wants?
Well, it's a process, and I developed the process for myself, and then I started teaching it after I already started Farther to Go. I was teaching people the tools, goals, habits, and intentions to get what they wanted, but people didn't know what they wanted. So I created the What Do You Want course, and that's an 8-week course where people do use a variety of tools to identify, usually it's 9 to 13 big picture wants, and they've identified them. And so each person's list of big picture wants is different. There may be some wants that are fairly common, but there are I've not found two people's lists of big picture wants that are identical.
Is there something that listeners could do today as a result of listening to start figuring out some of that? Any tips that you have?
The first thing that people do in the course and that anybody can do is get 28 5x8 index cards, and once a day for 28 days, fill out an index card starting with what I really want, and fill each line, writing down whatever comes to mind of what you really want. And you're not, in that case, you're not trying to identify the big picture wants, you're just writing whatever comes up. So I want a Frappuccino. I want to move to Tucson. I want to get along better with my kids. Whatever it is, you just uncensored fill those things out. That's sort of a starting point for people.
And that way you just, it's a consistent every day for 28 days. And I imagine towards the middle and end of the 28 days, you start seeing some different things coming out.
Yes, during the second half of filling those cards out is when people often notice different things. Number one, people notice a lot of similarities, and that's useful. But then they start having things show up that they are surprised to see. So you sort of get rid of the stuff that's at the top first. That keeps coming out right away at the beginning. And then you start seeing different things, yes. And then we work on categorizing those things in terms of the course. We categorize those things, which is a long process.
Let's talk a little bit about you as a woman being able to launch your business and be successful and have your own workshop and way of, you know, doing all of this. Why did you need to make that change, and how did you actually make the change?
Well, I knew that I needed to make the change because I'm normally an optimistic person who's relatively okay with whatever the circumstances are. And I really wasn't at that point. And I realized I hadn't been for a while. So what happens, the technical thing that goes on is that cortisol is released in your brain. And if a little bit of cortisol is released, then you tend to want to self-soothe. So there's a stimulus response thing. But if a lot of cortisol is released, you're really unhappy, that causes you to pay attention. And so that's really what I experienced. I knew that I couldn't do some little minor thing to make myself feel better, that I had to do something big. Mm-hmm. And I knew that I had a lot of tools, but I just had a sense that there was a piece missing. I didn't know what the piece was, but I knew that there was something missing. And so I just set off actually to do this for myself, to figure out what was going on for me. And I started seeing some things. And then because of the nature of my personality, you know, okay, kids, don't you want to know about this? Come and join me and let's all do this together. So within a couple months, actually, I had gotten a group of other women together. And so I kind of flailed around with them for a while until I learned more and figured out what was happening. And so in a way, it was kind of easy. It was clear that other people were interested. They wanted to make changes. And so it wasn't hard to find people to play with me, basically, is what I was doing then.
Right. When you say your personality, I know you do a lot of work on personalities, and you do work on the Enneagram, and you mentioned that at the beginning of the interview. Can you talk about your Enneagram work and kind of explain it to folks?
The Enneagram is a personality typing system, and it's been around for, I don't really know how long it's been around. It's been popular in the U.S. probably since the 70s or 80s. And it defines 9 basic personality types, but there are a lot of variations. And each of these personalities has a different worldview. So it's as if they're looking at the world from a different perspective. And if you put all these perspectives together, you'd get one great complete perspective, but nobody has that. So the goal is to recognize what your particular slant on things is, and that not everybody has that same slant. And so you can get a better sense of where other people are coming from and get along better with them, understand them, and also find out some of what your own unconscious tendencies are. So we all just are on autopilot most of the time. The Buddhists say that, neuroscientists say that, the Enneagram says that, and the Enneagram actually shows you, oh, here's how you are on autopilot. Whenever you're in situation A, you do behavior B. Whether that's appropriate for that situation or not, that's the way you're going to react. But once you recognize that that's what you automatically do, you have an opportunity to say, yeah, that's not going to work in this situation. Maybe I can try something else. And so I learned about the Enneagram when I was a substance abuse counselor. 20 years ago, I got certified as an Enneagram instructor, and it was the best tool I had for my clients. It was the best tool that...
To help them understand their personality?
To help them understand what their automatic behavior was, and to help me understand what their high points were and what their deficiencies were, so to speak. Mm-hmm. So you have doing, thinking, and feeling types. That's one of the breakdowns of the Enneagram. So you could have people who really could get in touch with their feelings. They just didn't have any problem with that, but they were too in touch with their feelings. They just couldn't put a logical thought together mm-hmm. to figure out what to do next. Or you had people who could figure it all out, but they just couldn't take the next step. Or you had people that could take all the steps, but once they got clean, then they were faced with their feelings, and they didn't know what to do with those. So if you understood where they were coming from Enneagram-wise, you were prepared for what those kinds of things would be, and you knew which area they needed the most support in.
It can be really reassuring. I mean, I have heard you talk about the Enneagram, and I have figured out my type, and it's reassuring, it's enlightening, it's very interesting to connect the dots, kind
yes.
of.
Yes.
And then figure out some of the people that are close to you in your life and figure out what they are, and then kind of like see how these two personality types work together.
Yes. Yes. And one thing that I'd like to say is that some people really object to being typed, and there may be a misunderstanding about the process. People think that it's stereotyping, that typing equals stereotyping. But one thing that I learned about the brain is that our brain is categorizing all the time anyway. You can't stop your brain from categorizing. And so if you actually learn about some of these types, what you can do is the part of your brain that's categorizing can be intelligent about it instead of unintelligent. So if you understand really what a type 1 is all about, then when you're approaching a type 1, your brain is informed about category type 1, as opposed to just whatever conclusions it's come to on its own that are uninformed.
So you're an 8, right?
Yes.
You said that at the beginning. You're an 8. What does that mean? Talk a little bit about how you're an 8.
So 8s are an aggressive type, and we're a doing type. And in this culture, at least, it's much easier to be a type 8 if you're a guy than it is if you're a woman. So all of those descriptions about how women are different from men don't apply generally to type 8 women. And so type 8s aren't conventional women, usually. Growing up, I wasn't going to put aside what I was up to in order to go along with what somebody else wanted me to do. I wasn't necessarily mother's little helper. In fact, I gave her all kinds of grief because I'd forget to do all the stuff that she wanted me to do. So we have our agendas, 8s. We have an agenda, and we don't like to be moved away from our agenda. So I don't have a problem with going after what I want or following through with things. But what I have a problem with is taking care of myself. So in terms of this wellness issue, I would frame it as poor self-care. I go after what I want, so whereas other women may be putting themselves second for other people, that's usually not a problem for me, but self-care goes by the wayside. And I think that's probably true for a lot of 8s who don't think about it anyway. That the idea is take action, get the thing done, get on to the next task, accomplish, do, and do it regardless of how you feel, do it regardless of how much sleep you got, do it regardless of all of those other things?
Okay, so I'm an eight. This is funny because you're describing me in a lot of ways. And Joycelyn, when you were just talking about self-care as an eight, I find that many women put self-care last on their list just because women generally are taking care of other people and taking care of other things. Would you say that you've seen that in all across personality types?
In a lot of them, yes, I've seen that. I think it's more normal for women to put themselves second or third in this culture. And in a lot of the Enneagram types, for example, there are type two women called the helper. Type two men would be a little less inclined to put themselves second. They would do it, but they wouldn't do it to the extent that type two women do. Type two women, I think, just fall into this crater that we have in the society that you should be attending to other people. So if you already have that tendency and that's the expectation, you're sunk. Mm-hmm. So I think it takes a lot more to climb out of that if you're a type two woman.
Well, a lot of what we talk about on the Well Woman Show, as you know, is how we can take care of ourselves and how we do take care of ourselves in order to do all of the things we do. And that means being selfish sometimes. And I use the word selfish a lot because I like it. Because it's sort of this bad word, right? Where people are, oh, I don't want to be selfish. Well, actually, yeah, you do, and I do. And I think that if we act selfishly, we would automatically put ourselves in the number one slot sometimes. And I know you can't do that all the time. You have other people you have to take care of. But I think it would help.
Yes, I agree. And I think I've had probably less of an issue with that because I don't have children, and my partner was very willing to go along. My partner really was, I had a partner for 30 years, and he was very supportive. He did not expect me to be somebody else. He did not expect me to be a type two. And so I was able to continue doing the things that I wanted to do, and he would come along for the ride often. He said he enjoyed being with me because I was always up to something. And so...
Wait, and what type was he?
He was a four.
Okay.
And that's a feeling type. So he went against the grain in terms of the cultural expectations for a man. And so we were opposites, but we were not traditional opposites. And knowing that really made a difference in our relationship.
And so what's the last selfish thing that you've done then?
The last selfish thing that I did was actually probably ending a relationship. I felt that I needed to be the adult in the relationship always. And I had to maintain my demeanor. I had to not react to all kinds of things that were inappropriate in order to keep the relationship going. And I finally got to a point of saying, there was one moment where I realized that it was the price was too high, that I wasn't going to be able to maintain the relationship and maintain myself at the same time. And so I just opted to end the relationship.
You're listening to The Well Woman Show, and I'm speaking today with Joycelyn Campbell, who is the owner of Farther To Go, and she is an Enneagram specialist. Joycelyn, we're moving into the segment I call Superpowers for Success. And so I want to ask you a few quick questions. Mm-hmm. We'll just kind of go through them. What does success in life actually mean to you?
Success in life right now means to me to be able to keep doing what I'm doing, to keep learning more about what's going on with the brain, to impact more and more people, to find different and better ways to deliver this, to make a difference. That's what success means.
And when did you know you were really good at what you do?
I've been doing variations of this teaching training kind of thing actually since I was a kid. So that piece I knew that I was good at. And I'm a pretty good synthesizer. So I think I've known about pieces of this for most of my life, but this seems to be where everything has pretty much come together for me, and I can see how I can actually have a significant impact, a really positive impact for people.
And also, describe one habit that contributes to your well-being.
One habit that contributes to my well-being is that I have set up a morning routine so that I always start my day off exactly the same way, no matter what time I get up, and I go through the same process and the same steps. so that I'm not wasting system two attention trying to decide, make trivial decisions.
What's your routine? I'm dying to know.
My cat helps me. I get up in the morning and she precedes me into the bathroom, and then she precedes me to my office where I get everything set up, and then she precedes me into the kitchen where I make breakfast, and then she precedes me, then she plays. Then I go into my office and have breakfast, and then we spend 20 minutes sitting together in my bedroom, and I have my coffee and I brush her and she sits on my lap and we look out the window. And that's what I call white space, because I'm not trying to figure out problems. I'm not thinking about things or mulling things over. I'm just present with my cat. And so after that, I give her her treats, and then I get dressed, and then I start my work day.
Oh, I love that. I love the white space, because that is such an important time to have, where you're not trying to interact with someone. You're not trying to figure something out, do something, produce something.
Right. Right. And my cat, no, if I happen to get off on a tangent of really wrestling mentally with something and I'm not present, she will bat my face. And so that gets me, that reminds me that that's not what I mean to be doing when I'm sitting there. And I have to remember to take white space breaks during the day, but I already have that one that's built in the morning, and I don't ever have to think about that. I never opt to not do that. That just doesn't happen.
Okay, what do you mean take white space breaks during the day? What does that look like?
Well, it could be taking a 5 or 10 minute walk. It could be leaving the office and coming out into the living room and listening to some music. Just turning away from, my brain is constantly churning with all of the, what I'm reading, what I'm putting together, updating my classes. After the last class, I realized that I should add a piece about this, you know, doing all that sort of thing. And so it's hard for me, especially because I have an agenda, it's hard for me to even dissuade myself from, you know, continuing along that track.
Now, are there some personality types that need that white space more than others, or is it?
I think everybody needs it. But some people find it easier to be disrupted and take a break. And I think eights have just a very hard time being interrupted or disrupted. Once we're going, we just keep on going to our detriment.
Last superpower question. What superpower did you discover you had only to realize it was there all the time?
I discovered fairly recently that what I do is I create transformational solutions, which is sort of buzzwordy. But so what I call Farther to Go is brain-based transformational solutions. But when I started digging into what are some examples of these transformational solutions, I discovered that I was doing this when I was a kid, which is, here's a problem. I don't come up with a typical solution. I come up with a solution that nobody would have thought of, that doesn't look like it has anything to do with the actual problem at hand. And some of these, quite a few of these solutions, as it turns out, somebody pointed out to me, seem to involve a party.
So you're a pretty social person.
I am social, right. So as a kid, one of the examples that came to mind is when I was maybe 11, something like that, I was helping a neighbor, a girlfriend, clean out their basement. And her brother was getting in our way. He just would not leave us alone. We really were, she must have also been a doing type, we wanted to clean out the basement. So I said to him, Tommy, if you leave us alone now, we'll have a birthday party for you afterwards. So I got everybody involved in this. Tommy's mother, all the other kids in the neighborhood. We had presents. There was a dime store about a half a mile away. We all got presents for him, wrapped them. Mary, his mother, made a little easy bake oven cake. And so we actually had that party. And everybody thought that was great. And they all wanted birthday parties. So for the rest of that summer, every week somebody got a birthday party. There were 8 of us. So we had 8 birthday parties for 8 consecutive weeks. In the cleaned out basement, we had all the birthday parties.
So you achieved your goal.
Yes, I did.
Of course. What advice would you give your 25 or 30-year-old self?
I wouldn't bother, because my 25 or 30-year-old self would have nothing to do with advice from anybody, especially me.
Okay, what if your 25 or 30-year-old self would listen? What would you tell her?
Honestly, I would tell her to just keep on doing what she's doing. I really would. I've looked at where I ended up, and I had to acknowledge that some of the things that at the time I thought were really bad, if I hadn't gone through those things or experienced them, I really wouldn't have gotten to this point. I mean, I know that sounds like a truism too, but it's really accurate. that you don't know, you never know at the point that you're at what the rest of the story is going to be. Because we really are all in the middle of a story and we don't know what the outcome is going to be. But wherever we are, we think we know. We think, oh, this is really devastating or this is great. But we really don't know. There's no way to know.
Joycelyn Campbell, thank you for being with me this afternoon.
Thank you, Giovanna. I'm really glad to have been here.
That's it for our show today. I've been speaking with Joycelyn Campbell, Enneagram specialist and founder of Farther to Go. We talked about discovering and using the strengths of our personality types, how the unconscious brain can influence our decisions, and how to change this, and how to break bad habits and replace them with new ones. You can get the Riso Hudson Enneagram Type Indicator for free at www.wellwomanlife.com/006show. Our monthly live event, Well Woman Drinks, brings women together to share our successes and challenges as women, leaders, moms, aunts, sisters, and all the other roles we carry. If you'd like to attend a Well Woman Drinks near you, or if there isn't one in your city and you'd like to start one, email me at info@wellwomanlife.com. If you enjoyed the show, please take a moment and subscribe to it in iTunes and leave a review. This really helps raise visibility for the show, which is super helpful when it comes to producing it every week for you. You can also continue the conversation in the Well Woman Life community group at facebook.com/groups/wellwomanlifecommunity. For feedback, comments, or just to let me know you are listening today, find me on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Well Woman Life. I'm Giovanna Rossi for The Well Woman Show. Until next time, have a super powerful week.